Wabash Folklore Radio. Written by Andy Hertzfeld and Company, and read by Derek Warren. More Like a Porsche by Andy Hertzfeld. Time frame, March 1981. As of March 1981, I had been working on the Mac team for just 1 month. I was accustomed to returning to the office after dinner and working for a few hours in the evening. Even though many of the early Mac team members usually worked late and often went out for dinner together, I found myself alone one evening when I returned to Texaco Towers. As soon as I entered the building, I heard loud voices, apparently engaged in a spirited discussion, emanating from Bud's office, which was adjacent to mine. "It's got to be different, different from everything else." I recognized Steve Jobs' voice before I saw him as I passed by the door of Bud's office. He was standing near the doorway, near our only working prototype, conversing with someone who I didn't recognize, that Steve introduced to me as James Ferris, Apple's Director of Creative Services. "James is helping me figure out what the Mac should look like," he told me. The plan of record for the Macintosh industrial design was still the one conceived by Jeff Raskin, which chose a horizontally oriented, lunchbox-type shape, with the keyboard folding up into the lid of the computer for easy transportability, kind of like the Osborne 1, which we weren't aware of at the time. But Steve had a real passion for industrial design, and he never seriously considered following Jeff's recommendations. I went into my office and started to program, working on improving the code that drove the serial link between the Mac and Lisa. But I couldn't help overhearing the passionate discussion taking place next door between Steve and James Ferris. For some reason, they were talking about cars. "We need it to have a classic look that won't go out of style, like the Volkswagen Beetle," I heard Steve tell James. "No, that's not right," James replied. "The line should be voluptuous, like a Ferrari." "Not a Ferrari, that's not right either," Steve responded, apparently excited by the car comparison. "It should be more like a Porsche." Not so coincidentally, in those days, Steve was driving a Porsche 928. I thought it was kind of pompous to compare computers with sports cars, even metaphorically, but I was impressed with Steve's passion for elegance in the industrial design of the Macintosh. His powers of discrimination continually amazed me as the design took shape. Steve recruited Jerry Manick to lead the industrial design effort. Jerry was the early Apple employee who had designed the breakthrough plastic case for the Apple II. For the Macintosh, Jerry recruited a talented designer named Terry Oyama to do most of the detailed drafting of the actual design. The hard tooling for the plastic case was the component with the longest lead time, so we had to get started right away. A week or so after the car conversation, Steve and Jerry decided that the Macintosh should defy convention and have a vertical orientation, with the display above the disk drive instead of next to it, in order to minimize desktop footprint. This also dictated the use of a detachable keyboard. That was enough of a direction for Terry to draft a preliminary design and fabricate a painted plaster model. We all gathered around for the unveiling of the first model. Steve asked each one of us, in turn, to say what we thought about it. I thought it was cute and attractive, looking a lot like an Apple II, but with a distinctive personality all its own. After everyone else had their say, Steve cut loose with a torrent of merciless criticism. "It's way too boxy. It's got to be more curvaceous. The radius of the first chamfer has to be bigger. And I don't like the size of the bezel. But it's a start." I didn't even know what a chamfer was, but Steve was evidently fluent in the language of industrial design and was extremely demanding about it. Over the next few months, Jerry and Terry iterated on the design. Every month or so, there was a new plaster model. Before a new one was unveiled to the team, Jerry lined up all of the previous ones so we could compare the new one with past efforts. One notable improvement was the addition of a handle at the top of the case to make it easier to carry. By the fourth model, I could barely distinguish things from the third one, but Steve was always critical and decisive, saying he loved or hated a detail that I could barely perceive. At one point, when we were almost finished, Steve called up Jerry during one weekend and told him that we had to change everything. He had seen an elegant new Cuisinart at Macy's on Saturday, and he decided that the Mac should look more like that. So Terry did a whole new design based around the Cuisinart concept, but it didn't pan out. And soon, we were back on the old track after a one-week diversion. After 5 or 6 models, Steve signed off on the design, and the industrial design team shifted gears to do the laborious engineering work necessary to convert the conceptual model into a real, manufacturable plastic case. In February 1982, it was finally time to release the design for tooling. We held a little party, complete with champagne, to celebrate sending off the design into the world, the first major component of the Macintosh to be completed.